Welcome to the HACOMI Global Summit, an international gathering of today's leading HACOMI experts integrating mindfulness, loving presence, and embodied psychology into the fields of personal growth and transformation. We appreciate you sharing this information with your community. You can also join the conversation on Facebook at the Shift Network. And now your host, Manuela Mishke Reads.
Welcome to the HACOMI Summit. This is a production of the Shift Network. I'm Manuela Mishke Reads, and I'm so glad that you'll be joining us today. I have the pleasure to introduce you to our very special guest, Karen Bakey from Sydney, Australia. Karen, it's a great pleasure to have you joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So Karen Bakey, I want to say a few words about who Karen is. Karen is a PhD clinical psychologist based in Sydney, Australia. She's a certified HACOMI therapist and also a registered clinical psychologist with over 15 years of experience working with individuals, couples, and private practice in Sydney, Australia. Karen is a certified HACOMI teacher with the HACOMI Institute Pacifica team, teaching in Sydney professional trainings and co-facilitating with HulkaWise in the Australian HACOMI Embodied and Aware Relationship Trainings, also known as HEART. She runs workshops on aspects of HACOMI and HEART throughout Australia and provides clinical supervision. She co-edits the HACOMI News, a newsletter for the HACOMI Association Australia, and has also recently published in the HACOMI book. Karen holds a PhD in psychology and uses expressive writing as a therapeutic tool for survivors of trauma, and has also co-authored several peer-reviewed publications on expressive writing. She's worked extensively with adult survivors of child abuse and has trained in trauma modalities such as sensorimotor psychotherapy. Karen also integrates mindfulness-based approaches with attachment, trauma, parenting, relationship issues. She's passionate about assisting individuals, couples, and parents, and other therapists to support deepening awareness and connection with themselves, their partners, children, clients, and others. It's so wonderful to talk to you, Karen. And your title today is Resistance is Not a Problem, Working with Defenses. And I'm really glad you'll be talking about this theme because it seems like such an important issue in any kind of therapy, how to work with resistance. But in particular, it seems like HACOMI has a way of working with resistance that's rather unique. But before we kind of dive into all the particulars of that, I wonder if you can say a little bit more about what you mean by resistance. Can you define that for us a little bit?
Absolutely. Thank you, Manuela. Resistance, in most therapies and a lot of psychology and psychotherapies, resistance is seen as a problem. It seems to get in the way of effective therapy or make the process slow or challenging. And people will often use language that suggests that it's difficult, conjuring up images of a fight or a struggle. And, you know, a therapist might have a big sigh, like, oh, this client is so resistant, this is really difficult. And that slows the process down, makes it stale, makes it hard. You know, that's what I see. That's why I'm interested in this topic, is I'll see people will come to me in supervision or have questions about this client that just doesn't seem to be able to get anywhere. It's really hard work. We can see oftentimes advertised, regularly see advertisements for things like advanced workshops, like advanced skills for dealing with a treatment-resistant client. Like, there's this group of people out there that are, you know, so difficult. And so that I think, is problematic when we see it like that. So when I'm talking about resistance, I'm talking about things like there might be kind of milder things, sort of smaller things that might show up just in the middle of a session, like avoiding a topic or particular topics that the client doesn't want to go to. It might be avoiding feelings in general or a specific feeling, like the client might be maybe okay to be angry but doesn't ever feel sadness or vice versa. It might be just staying very intellectual and always talking about or analyzing and having difficulty becoming mindful or slowing down or those kind of things, sometimes having a bit of a yes-but reaction. So if you suggest, how about we try this, or what about you do that, the client's like, I guess, but, you know, comes across like that a lot of the time. Or it could even be more extreme, like regularly cancelling sessions or always turning up late or more challenging to the therapist. But I'm thinking about all kinds of resistance, just, and people might experience it themselves in in their own lives, like they think, you know, I really should clean up my house, but I just never seem to get there. I seem to be resistant to doing it. So that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about, and what I think happens often in the therapeutic community is it's seen as a problem. It's seen as difficult. It's seen as problematic, and it's, you know, like you need some specific advanced skills to deal with it. So that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. So what you're describing is really that resistance is very pervasive, and that stance of it's a problem. But your title really says resistance is not a problem. So I'm kind of curious if you can say more about how resistance is not a problem in therapy. That kind of hints towards a different way of thinking or working.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, that's right. So in Hakomi, we see resistance very differently. It's not a problem at all. In fact, quite the opposite. I would put out that resistance is actually a signpost. So when I encounter resistance, it's really exciting, actually. It's like, bring it on, great. And if we think of it like this, resistance can actually become the therapy. Like that actually becomes the juice of what we might work with rather than this hurdle to get over. So I can see it becoming the nuts and bolts of the client's concern. So one of the things that we do in Hakomi is that we use mindfulness to investigate how a person organizes their experience, how they are organized because of core material like childhood issues or belief systems or things like that. And we can see resistance in the same way. It's just another piece of information, you know. It's just another thing to work with. And so I try to encourage people not to see it as a problem, but to actually see it as a signpost that this is the kind of the route in, the way in to see that there's something else deeper going on here that would be really juicy to work with. So that's really why I say that. It's not a problem, it's actually a signpost, and it gives us some good information about which direction to head in.
Must not be so easy for the therapist either then, right? Be working with resistance.
There's Sorry, be easier for like the therapist?
That. It's not so, it sounds like
yeah.
it's, but yeah.
Well, it's much,
go ahead.
Yeah, a much better way to work, you know, it just frees you up a lot to not see things as struggling or difficult and just to get more, you know, more excited and more interested in what might be going on rather than seeing it as a roadblock, something in the way.
Must be quite a relief, actually, yeah. I wonder, do you have some, can you give us some idea of how you might work with resistance and maybe an example, or also how do you know which direction to head in when you encounter resistance?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we give you some broad brushstrokes on how you might want to work with it, and then we can go through an example as well. The first thing, when you experience some resistance, either in yourself as a therapist or yourself as a human being or as in the client that you might be working with, is to invite curiosity in. So that's my first thing, is number one, curiosity, to stay open and curious, to be willing to explore. So obviously if you're seeing it as a signpost, that's going to be much easier to do than if you're seeing it as a problem. Because as soon as you see it as a problem, when even you get this tiny little whiff of resistance even, willingness and openness disappears and everything shuts down. But if you see it as a signpost and you can invite it in, you can get excited, you can get curious, just as you might about any other part of the process. So if somebody I'm working with might describe something and might even say, oh, there's resistance there, or this is difficult, or they say, great, that's fantastic, you know, let that be here too. Just invite that in, be curious about it, see if we can stay with the resistance, let's see what it's got to tell us. So that's the first thing, really, is your whole attitude to resistance. And if you see it in this way, then a whole world of possibilities opens up. And then the next thing that we would do is, in Hakomi we have this little phrase that I really like, which is, we call it working at the barrier, or setting up camp at the barrier. So it's like I have an image of if you were driving along the freeway or the road or something like that, trying to get from A to B, and there's a roadblock. There's something is in the way. You know, there's some signposts or, you know, the big barricades up, and you can't get past. The frustration is, like, how do we get there? How do we get past this? And what I'm suggesting is that we don't want to just try to jump over it. It's not something we want to try and get through to get to something better on the other side. We actually want to set up camp at the barrier. And what we mean is literally with curiosity, we just park ourselves there. We don't try and go around. We don't try and go through. We just park right there and hang out at that barrier and see what we might discover from it. So it's a really different approach rather than trying to push past something. We hang out with it, get curious, hang out with it, see what might be going on, and shift from that push past it to get to something better mindset. Take a picnic and set up camp and enjoy what's going on right there.
Sounds very relaxed.
So that's part of, yeah, much more relaxed and much more spacious for the client. And and if you have that attitude as a therapist, then the client is going to follow suit with that. They're going to be far more open to seeing what's there for themselves. And then once we've done that, once we've invited it in and we're curious and we're hanging out there, then we have some particular Hakomi tools and techniques that we might use to go a little deeper and to start to explore the material itself. So one of those things that we might do is we use accessing or deepening into the experience. And we do that by becoming mindful about it, invite somebody to say, how about we just hang out here? And I'm going to invite you to just turn towards that in mindfulness and see maybe how you feel it in your body. So we might explore that. Maybe that shows up as a tension. It might be tight shoulders or crunching in the stomach or something like that, or maybe there's a gesture. The client might make a hand motion, like a stop sign or something like that. You catch that. You say, just look at that hand motion to see if you could do that again. So we hang in there with it and deepen into it, and we ask questions that help the person become more mindful. Notice that there. Just stay with it. So stay with that tension in your shoulders and see what comes next. We might even ask things like how big is it, what shape is it, what color is it. These are all ways to just get further and further into the experience, and that invites more and more curiosity and more willingness on the part of the client as well. And then once we've done that, then another one of our key techniques in Hakomi is to do what we call little experiments in mindfulness, and that we would do the same as now we're just working like we would work with anything else. Has kind of gone past it being resistance. Now we have something here. We have this tension or this hand motion or the tightness in the shoulders or some words that the person may be saying to themselves. And we've got a few different techniques that we would work with that and little experiments. So something like exaggerating a tension or a posture. So if the client's shoulders are really tight and hunched up, I might say to them, just see if you stay with that, and I'm just going to invite you to increase that just a little, like 1%, like just increase it like 1% and see what happens. So they tighten their shoulders up a little, bring them up a little bit higher, and then that usually helps the process to flow and see what comes next. And that's usually when we start to move into more core material or organizing principles or things like that from the person's maybe childhood or earlier in their life or something like that. What else? Another thing we could do would be what we call probes, which is a simple positive statement that the therapist offers to the client in mindfulness to help them to study their response. So let's say we had somebody who, for example, was having difficulty feeling any sadness, and they noticed that that was one emotion that they often seem to be resistant to feeling. So what we might say is I would invite them, I'd set this up with them so they know what's coming, and I would say to them, just notice what happens for you when I say these words to you. And I would say, it's okay to be sad here. And the client would notice what happens. That would help them to sort of see what the resistance is about. Why I would imagine they would get some kind of a no response to that, something their body would say no, or they might hear some words that said no, that's not okay, that's weak or something. And now you're starting to understand a little bit about what's going on around them. And then the other primary area around the little experiments in mindfulness for us is called taking over, which is when a therapist might do a little experiment in which the therapist will actually do or take over some of the resistance for the client so that they can explore what else is going on. So, for example, if someone said, they had some harsh critical words and that was what they'd always noticed, they might say something to themselves like, just get on with it, don't be silly, just get on with it. And then what we would do with that is, again, I would set that up. They would know what was coming, set it up in mindfulness and say, do you just notice what happens when I say those words for you? So then I would say and try to say it in exactly the same tone and the way that they say it. I would say, you know, don't be silly, just get on with it. Don't be silly, just get on with it. And then they can actually notice what else happens. So the ways that we really work with this stuff is to, you know, play around. It's really fun. You've got curiosity, you're hanging out there, you've got your picnic rug and you're just hanging out together. You're not trying to kind of get somewhere in particular and move through something. And you're working with little experiments with mindfulness, trying different things out and exploring what happens. So that's the kind of main nuts and bolts of how we would work, and we follow the direction of the client. Whatever's showing up, we stay present and we see where it goes.
It's interesting, as you describe that, it really gives that feeling of how resistance is actually kind of the juice of what you're working with. I get now how this is really not,
absolutely,
how you're saying it's not a problem, because this is actually what you want to be working with. That resistance is where all the interesting, fun, and transformative experience are happening, sounds like it, by what you described.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if you also have some examples of how you might work with someone's resistance, how you're aligning, you know, how it's kind of lining this up here with the curiosity and the working at the barrier and the accessing and the experiments and the mindfulness. You kind of lay down this wonderful path. And do you have some kind of examples or a story or anything from your clinical experience?
Yeah, I do. I do have a lovely example to share with you. But it actually, if I can just say one more thing before that, which will
sure.
make a little more sense with the example, and that is another little idea that I think is helpful in working with resistance is to think of the idea of protective parts. So we think of ourselves as made up a lot of different parts. That's very common in a lot of different therapy. We do that a lot in Hakomi, but it's not unique to Hakomi. So we might have a child part or an approval-seeking part or a caregiving part. But when I'm thinking about resistance in particular, I'm often thinking about it and often languaging this with a client as a protector part. So resistance, if people are seeing it as a problem, they see it as difficult. But if you can translate that a little around into seeing it as a protector part, what I mean by that is it's part of the person operating to protect them in some way. Even though on the surface it might seem like this behavior or this attitude that they're holding that we were calling resistance is kind of getting in the way, if we really dive down and we get into the juice the way that we are suggesting here, you will find that it always makes sense, that there is some kind of protection, that this part doing the kind of quote resistance is actually trying to protect the person in some way and has a really clear role or purpose or function in the overall system. Even though it might not make sense on the, you know, in the bigger picture, if you really get in and see what that part is on about, you know, this part that might have been created in their family, in their upbringing or something like that, it really makes a lot of sense. So I'm always holding that idea of what protective function this could have and how is this part trying to protect the person in some way. So I'm just mentioning that because I think that's in this example that I'd like to share with you.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
That comes through pretty clear. Yeah. So
kind of
the example I'm thinking of is... Sorry?
Go ahead.
Okay. So the example I'm thinking of is a person who presented to me because she was having trouble doing presentations in her workplace. So part of her job was to prepare and deliver presentations, and she found herself resisting and procrastinating. And what was really interesting, or what she was really confused about, really, was that she loved her job. She was really good at it. She knew that. She believed that. This is not a problem of low self-esteem or difficulty with confidence. Or she actually was really interested in the topics and invested in them. And she just couldn't understand why, if she was really interested in this, why would she leave these presentations till the last minute? So she would, her behavior, what was the pattern that was happening, was that she would leave them till too late and end up really stressed that she hadn't done it and have to work really late the night before and get it done. And she always got it done, but it was just so difficult. It was a challenge, and It was stressing her a lot. And then she would berate herself for her resistance. So she would say, it's just really silly. It makes no sense at all. I just have to get on with it. I just need to be getting on with it. And she'd taken some other therapeutic approaches where she'd done presentation skills workshops, where she'd tried to, you know, just get on with it, to structure her time and try to set up, you know, rewards for herself to do it earlier. And none of that had really worked. So she was interested to see if she could try something different. And so we agreed to work with the resistance and see what we could learn from it. And I told her that I would be inviting her to be curious about it. And then I said to her that my belief is that it would make total sense in the end, that this puzzle that seemed to not make any sense right now would definitely make sense in the end. And there was likely to be a really good reason why she was resisting like this. So as I've described, we started with mindfulness and curiosity. And I just did that by inviting her to think about the next presentation. She had something due in a couple of days because she was doing them quite often. And just to bring it into her mind. So in her mind, she just imagined this presentation and thought about it. And I invited her to just see what she noticed in her body. And I invited her to really let the resistance be with us rather than trying to push past it. And so this is what happened for her. So she became mindfulness. She noticed, the first thing she noticed was that she was really easily distracted. She felt all of a sudden the sounds that were outside of my office and the noises around her became really loud. Like the clock was really loudly ticking and she could suddenly hear the cars outside, and it was like she was just, she said it felt like distraction. She was just getting distracted out there and her mind would go to follow them. And of course her initial reaction was, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. You know, I'm supposed to be doing this here. I'm supposed to be being mindful of my presentation and I'm just thinking about what's outside. So again, I just invited her to allow that. I said, let that be here. Just let yourself hear those sounds. Let them be really loud. And just let yourself hear them. And so when she did that, the next thing she noticed was that she became really foggy and cloudy in her mind. Her mind felt really foggy and cloudy, like it was really hard to think. And again, I just invited that fogginess to be here, something along the lines of, you know, just turn towards that, allow it in, let yourself notice what else goes with that. And as she did that, the next thing she noticed was how tight her jaw was. And again, I said, just let that be here. And as she stayed with it, she became aware, she just held the jaw in that tight position that was just automatically there. She realized that it was like as if her jaw was stuck in a smiling pose, just a little bit of a smile in her mouth with the tightness in her jaw. And again, I said, you know, let's just hang out with that, let that be here. Again, as she stayed with that, the next thing she noticed was that her heart rate was just ever so slightly elevated. This was nothing massive, just the teeniest little elevation in her heart rate. And it kind of came with a sense that it was like fear, just a really mild level of fear. And then as she stayed with that, the next thing was that she sort of noticed how heavy her shoulders were, and she could sense that they were kind of rounded, a little bit more curling slightly forward, making a little concave in her chest. Again, these things are not massive and exaggerated, just a tiny little movement, and those are the things that we can only notice when we use mindfulness. So then I invited her here to do a little experiment in mindfulness, and I suggested that she just a tiny little bit, ever so slightly, round and curl her shoulders a little bit more, just exaggerating the slight concave in her chest. And as soon as she did that, she had this feeling of fear and shame arise. And when she noticed that, it was like she had this sense of kind of being laughed at. And I noticed that as she was doing this, her head was moving a little bit towards the left. And I gently drew her attention to that. Did you notice that? Invited her to stay with that. And as she did that, she could feel, it was almost as if like this laughing at her was kind of almost hitting her in the face, that she was turning to the left. And as she did that, when she let herself stay with that awareness of the left hand head, she noticed some sadness came up. And then she actually got a memory. Like, it wasn't really strong and clear, but it was a kind of hazy memory of a sense of kind of being laughed at for saying something. And it was around the age of sort of 7, 8 years old, and she had a sense that she was in a group of girlfriends, you know, schoolgirls, and she said something, and they laughed at her and saying, you know, kind of burst out laughing, saying, you're not going to say that, are you? And she could feel in herself this sense of wanting to hide, but at the same time having to smile and laugh it off and kind of push through and put on this brave face in this group of girls. And she said, that's exactly what I do with the presentations. I laugh it off and I just push through with this little smile. So I invited her to stay with this younger part of herself, the little girl who was laughed at. And, you know, we just stayed with that for a little bit. I validated her, gave her some empathy. You know, that was really sad. That really hurt you. And she was able to stay without a gentle tear kind of roll down her face. And so we stayed with that for a little bit. And as we did that for a few moments, what she then reported was she noticed a sense of her head now wanting to turn back towards the right. So I invited her to let that happen really slowly, just to really gently move her head towards the right, following this natural organic impulse that's showing up in her body. And as her head turned, some words just popped into her head. And what she heard herself say was, what I have to say is valid. It's my opinion and I can say it. And she said those words and she just smiled. It was beautiful. She stayed with these words. She noticed then also some organic movements start to happen in her body. As she just stated that her shoulders began moving back, her chest opened up, her head began lifting, and the whole body started to look really erect and proud. She was beaming by now. She's just saying these words inside. She said it feels like a real yes feeling inside. She's like, yes, what I have to say is valid. I can say my opinion. And so we stayed with that. In Hakomi, we call this anchoring. We just hang out with this new experience and really get it like nice and solid in the body. And at the end she said, wow, it really makes sense to me now. And that's what I mean by, you know, if you understand that history, that of course there would be delays and procrastination. And so she was pretty excited about that. And after the session, she let me know that she'd gone home that evening and she wrote her whole presentation in one go. She sat down, she just did it. And she didn't even use, you know, normally she would look up loads and loads of textbooks and resources and online and spend hours kind of getting information. And she said she didn't do any of that. She just sat down and she did it from her own knowledge. She just drew on her own opinions, what she knew for herself. And she said she was so excited about preparing the presentation that she couldn't type fast enough to get all of her ideas down. Mm-hmm. So that's really fantastic. Fantastic for her. It's a fantastic way to work. And, you know, that's an example I mean about, you know, there what seemed to be resistance was a problem that she was kind of supposed to overcome and get through was actually, you know, really juicy.
And it sounds so, the beautiful story as you describe that is like this resistance or this attitude, a belief system about pushing through as you are kind of slowing her down and working with it in such a creative way. It sounds like it's opened up her life force and her creativity, right? So it kind of was like a big plug was coming undone, as you described that. Yeah, that's often, I guess, the experience people have, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, there is really something in her that knows that she can, you know, what she says is valid, that she can have her opinion, but it's been blocked. And so when we free that up, when we, you know, move this experience out and she really feels that in her body, then, as you say, creativity, lots of things get freed up and, you know, she just goes from leaps to bounds to where she goes from there. It's fantastic.
Yeah, then creativity becomes an ally and resistance becomes the way to work towards that. Yeah, beautiful. I wonder if there are any other things you might do while working with resistance with that theme. Are there any kind of tricks or from your trade that you use?
I'm not sure there's a, I mean, just the same, more of the same, I think. I really just encourage people to think about the attitude and get creative, just, you know, little experiments. Like, just because I've described those kind of experiments, there's really, you know, you can do anything. Like, if you follow that impulse and you really trust that there's something, you know, that's really meaningful in here, there's something juicy, then you can, you know, you can get up and move around the room. They can move their arms and legs around. They can say certain things or try out different postures or all sorts of things. So, you know, therapy becomes, you know, so much more enjoyable, so much more interesting and far less stale. And it's not just about talking about the problem, but actually doing something to play around with it, to try things out. And that's the thing, you know, sometimes, it, you know, even if it, initially it feels hard, I would get somebody to to study that resistance. You know, if this were to come up towards the end of a session, for example, or they're not quite ready to explore it, I might get them to really notice that, how it shows up in their week, and come back with, lots of information about. So they come back like, wow, I noticed I do it here, I do it there, I do it in this area, and this is how it shows up, and then we already started in that kind of process of getting excited about it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's like a two-pronged approach also, as I'm listening to you here today, that the tools that you employ with that mindfulness and playfulness and creativity and so beautifully listening and tracking your client, and at the same time, as you started the talk, you were talking about this kind of attitude of the therapist not to really hold resistance as a problem. So it sounds like these two need to kind of go together to be successful at working with resistance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you need to have mindfulness on board. You need to be willing. You know, if we just talked about that, those presentations, I wouldn't have been able to get to that information. It came through the body. It came through mindfulness. It came through slowing down. But as you say, the first step is to have that attitude. Or we wouldn't even go to that. We wouldn't even be starting with mindfulness. But curiosity is definitely, one important piece. But then we do need to slow down. We do need to be mindful and see if we trust the whole process. In Hakomi, we use that idea of organicity a great deal, to trust that in organicity that there's a natural process here that we can tap into. And when we do, like we did with her body, like just by staying with that, I didn't tell her to move her head to the right. That came out of her body, and all that information was already there. And it's entirely different to me giving her a little pet phrase to say, how she could logically say, yes, of course, my opinion is valid. Yes, of course, I can say what I think. But if we'd written, we could have written a little affirmation for her, and she could have walked around the house saying, I can say what I think, my opinion is valid, but I really doubt that it would have had the same kind of magical impact
right. As
it did for her.
Fabulous. I wonder if you have if you have something you can leave us, the listeners today, something that they can address in their own lives when they are dealing with their own resistance or kind of coming up against that. Do you have any kind of tips for our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like a broken record, but the same thing, I guess, I'm saying, if you feel resistance in your own life, turn towards it. Don't see it as a problem. Or try not to look at it as a signpost. See, so if you are feeling that in your everyday life, then you can pause and notice it, get curious about it. Why does it show up here? Why doesn't it show up there? What if it's here but not there? That's really interesting. What if it's everywhere? What's the kind of nature of it? Be mindful of it. Practice some mindfulness and bring that piece that feels resistant into your meditation practice and see what you notice. Just become aware, slow down, get really interested in it and develop that different kind of relationship to it. The relationship of curiosity rather than the relationship of frustration, because that's what people do, is like, I'm so slow at this, or I don't really get this, or I should be better at it, or, why can't I get on with my life, or why can't I save enough money, or all those kinds of things that people will bring as they see as problems in themselves that are, somehow something that shouldn't be there, or something they should get through, or why can't I trust anybody? Well, that'd be interesting. What's that about? So, small little things and big things, all the same. Just bring that changed attitude of curiosity, and even just doing that will make a huge difference.
Fantastic. Well, that was really wonderful. Thank you so much for talking us through today about resistance.
It seems
like such an important piece. Yeah.
How
can people find out about your work, Karen? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about where you work and what you offer and how to find out about you?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm based in Sydney, and so in Australia, I run quite a lot of workshops, often 2 or 3 day introductory workshops about Hakomi or heart, the relationships training. So I run those often in Sydney, but also around the rest of Australia. And in Australia, we also have a 2 year professional Hakomi training that we run out of Sydney and one out of Perth. And I run the heart training, which is a 1 year relationships training. So those kind of things are on offer at different times depending on the year and, you know, which kind of intakes we have. Probably the best thing for people to do if they want to find out more or get in touch with me is to go to the Hakomi website, the Australian Hakomi website, which is www.hakomi.com.au. And on there they'd find some information about trainings, and the current workshops are always listed there. Also probably a good thing to do is to sign up to the mailing list for Hakomi, because that way you don't have to keep checking the website. You'll just get, we don't send too much out, but you'll just get an email each time there's a new workshop on offer or something else happening in the Hakomi community. So that would be the best way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for taking the time to speak to us today. And thank you all for listening. Yeah, thank you so much. Wonderful. And thank you all for listening. That was a great session with Karen Bakey today. So be sure that you join us for the next session of the Hakomi Summit. And if you want to look at the upgrade package, you can visit hakomiglobal.com/upgrade. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Hakomi Global Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. For more information about joining our global community of people awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about the entire Hakomi Global Summit collection of teachers, or to add all these sessions to your personal library, visit hakomiglobal.com/upgrade. We hope you'll share the summit with your friends and family. We appreciate your dedicated support.